listened to the Drew Marshall Show before?
George Bush is the Antichrist. Honest to God.
You think George Bush is the Antichrist?
Yes.
Okay, so George Bush is the Antichrist because he's a nice guy.
He's a nice guy. He's fooling people. He's a trickster.
Would you vote for George W. Bush?
Absolutely.
Why? He's the Antichrist.
I think the guy needs to read his Bible.
Would you vote for George W. Bush?
Absolutely. I hope he's not the Antichrist, because then I'm going to vote for the wrong guy.
Yeah, I hate when that happens.
The Drew Marshall Show, right here on Joy 1250.
I live my life like this, no tomorrow. And all I've got, I had to steal. At least I don't need to beg or borrow. Yes, I'm living at a pace I kill.
John D. Ali, a.k.a. Lord Egan, was really involved with the Church of Satan founded by Anton LaVey in 1966 for quite a while. The first Church of Satan was founded in October 1994, and this was the brainchild of John Ali. Joining us today on the show, probably one of the first times in Christian media here in North America that John has been a part of, I think. John, would that be fair to say?
Very rarely. In fact, they tend to avoid me. Like the plague.
Right. Well, my apologies for avoiding you so long. It's taken me 6 years to get to you. Maybe we could start with some definitions, because there's a lot of confusion out there about what Satanism is and isn't. So can I just start firing away some real quick questions at you?
Sure.
Okay, let's talk about theistic Satanism. Somebody explained that to me as reverse Christians. Is that about right?
I would start by saying that back in 1966, when Anton LaVey formed his so-called Church of Satan, there wasn't these divisions within Satanism. It's almost like Christianity. It started out the same way and then very quickly split up into all these different factions. And I think that the differences between them are now getting ludicrous. And I guess there's a theistic branch that believes in the literal Christian devil as defined by Christians, and they worship that devil as opposed to the creator who they think is evil. And and then there's the ones that look upon the darker pagan gods as being part of biblical, you know, if you go back in your Bible, you have the adversary. If you go back to the Hebrew, you have the adversary as representing the wrath of God, or as a semblance, one of the semblances of God, and not really, you know, as being one part of a whole picture, and there not being a devil opposed to the Creator, because creation cannot be divided against itself, and this is, by the way, what I personally believe as well.
So would you say that you're part of, you believe more in sort of atheistic Satanism or Luciferianism?
I wouldn't even go as far as, then there's the atheistic, oh yes. I'm in a minority within a minority, I think. I believe literally that the kingdom of heaven resides within, and I take it to, in a very literal and not a biblical sense. I honestly believe that. I believe that, that within each person there exists a universe between our ears, and it's different than the one we see with our eyes and the one we observe. It's a universe within itself, and what we believe becomes real for us. It's a personal universe, and what we believe becomes real for us. And I'd say even the psychotic person in the insane asylum who sees monsters coming through the wall at him, and or delusional or whatever, that reality is real for them, and every bit as important as the reality that you experience in your day-to-day life.
Let's talk about the word panentheism, which I guess is the technical term for monistic theism, correct?
Panentheism is more what I believe. It's pantheism, but it's just a more specific form of pantheism.
Right.
And I hate to get into it because the reason I hate to get into it is because people get so caught up on words. It's almost like when I meet the general public, I want to simplify it as much as possible so that they don't get caught up on words that they attach significance to mean this, that, or the other thing. Words are very limiting.
Right.
There's nothing, you know, usually what I try to do is when I'm lecturing, you know, students or whatever, I try to break it down to, well, you know, I had this personal experience and I described my personal account, and it's kind of like witnessing. It is. It's very much like witnessing. It's amazing. And
speaking of witnessing, do you guys do that? Do you go out and, like, you know, do door knocking or anything, two by two, and irritate people like the J-Dubs or anything, do you?
Definitely not.
Okay.
I don't believe in proselytizing at all. But if a person comes to me and I share my personal experience with them, and I don't preach to them at all. And what I'll do is I'll relate my experiences to them, and if they benefit from it, if they get something from it, then great. If they don't, well, that's great too. I've often said to them, you know, my reality is my reality is my reality, and your reality is your reality is your reality.
Well, that sounds like a good T-shirt.
Yes.
All right, so let's talk about the different groups that are out there, and I've just got a very limited understanding, so please excuse my ignorance here. But
I was going to say, if you describe an accident to a cop, is that evangelizing?
Yeah, well, that's another T-shirt. There you go.
And then you'll say it's the subjective self, and everyone has their own subjective experience. It's like, you know, if you say, gee, I saw that man leave that bank that just robbed the bank officer, and he was fat. The thin man says, oh, that guy was fat. The fat man says, oh, he was about average weight.
Right.
I mean, to the fat man's perspective, the real fat man, let's say he's 400 pounds, he says, you know, that guy was normal weight. He wasn't. And then the thin man says, no, he was fat. It's like everyone's experience, their own personal experience is overlaid onto that, what you call solid reality, the reality we both share together. And so everyone's experience is completely different.
Okay, all right. Now, as far as what you came through, did you not come through the Church of Satan, who founded by Anton LaVey in 1966, and I guess the current leader is Peter Gilmore, is that right?
Yes. I have much disagreement with.
From the impression that I get, they almost sound like a bit of an elitist group.
Yes. I believe that when LaVey started his church, it was more like, a fun thing to do. He had a business partner who said, you know, this might be a great way to make money. You start this Church of Satan. You know, he had an occult circle in San Francisco. And he, you know, it's actually documented. LaVey had this friend who was a business partner, says, hey, want to make some money? Let's start this Church of Satan and really get people going, and you could wear devil horns. And he says, you know, that might be nice, and I could, I've read a lot of Nietzsche and all these other, the Antichrist and all these other philosophers, and I could come up with a kind of a philosopher, Redbeard, Ragnar Redbeard, who was an author in 1890, he wrote Might is Right. Which is a book I'm sure you're familiar with.
Sure, yeah.
And he says, you know, just put it all together and we'll have a kind of an anti-religion. But, of course, as LaVey studied this deeper, and it was the realization that the people who, some of the people who historically practiced what the church called Satanism were really people who were Gnostics, who were looking within for the truth. They weren't looking to an exterior source. They weren't looking to a preacher. They weren't looking to a gospel. They were looking within to find the light. And that's what I believe the true Satanist, this is where the true Satanist is, the modern day Satanist has deviated from. The early Christian Gnostic type of people who who meditated and who looked, searched within for the truth, and who when they read scripture or whatever, would weigh it with the inner revealing that was coming to them,
right,
in their own day-to-day experience and their own meditations and their own search within.
Okay.
They would balance what they would, you know, it wasn't really, it's all here according to Reverend so-and-so said this, so I believe everything Reverend so-and-so
said. Yeah, well, that happens in the Christian world for sure. All right, so we've got the Church of Satan started by Anton LaVey in 1966, whose current leader is Peter Gilmore. Then we've got the first satanic...
Well, that practices atheism. Don't ask me why.
Oh,
he's
really?
He's an atheist.
Really?
Yeah. Peter Gilmore will tell you he's an atheist. He doesn't believe in magic. He doesn't believe in anything so-called supernatural or spiritual, even.
Hmm.
And I say that's absolutely ludicrous.
Well, it certainly wanders a fair bit away from what Anton wrote in the Satanic Bible, that's for sure.
Right, where he even outlined three different forms of magic and how to practice it.
Yeah. All right, then there's the first Satanic Church, which is the founder of that, Carla LaVey, is that right?
Carla LaVey, and she's more or less an offline group. She's not interested really in numbers, but just in... She was her daddy's girl, and
so obviously she doesn't agree with how things are being run at her father's place.
Absolutely not.
Right. Okay.
And, don't mind my dog. That's Pazuzu.
Okay.
I have a Brussels Griffon, which is a kind of a gargoyle dog, and I like to bring it out on Halloween and scare Christians.
Okay. All right.
But he's very cute.
Right.
As well as very ugly. At the same time,
well, that's like
wings. You put wings on them.
That's like a lot of televangelists. All right, let's talk about then the First Church of Satan, which again that was started by you in about 2003. Is that about right?
Yes, and it was more or less my statement of more or less getting back at this new crop of Satanists that came on the scene after LaVey got sick and was really near his death. The neo-Nazis started to come into the fold, and so did all of these new atheistic types who were dilettantes. You know, they didn't really get it. They didn't. They weren't into the into the real what I believe to be true Satanism, which was man elevated, the divinity of man elevated,
right.
Personal divinity,
right,
and
right.
Not. You know, they were just jerks. I don't know how to put it, but they were jerks, and I would challenge them, and they would oh my goodness, they would smear my name and do all sorts of terrible things
Yeah, lots of stuff. Okay, now what about the Temple of Set? That was started, I think, in 1975 by Michael Aquino, and now Patricia Hardy runs that. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, and what he did is, in his own experience, he had a spiritual crisis when LaVey finally came out and more or less admitted that the Church of Satan was really a vehicle for his own pleasure. And not really something that should be taken seriously. In fact, this may bring you back a ways to Martin Luther and all that, but LaVey said, listen, if you want to buy a degree off of me, you know, hey, maybe you got a deed you can show me, or a yacht, or some, hey, you know, we could use some beluga caviar here. And he would make jokes, and it was like, you know, show me what you have. Maybe I'll make you a magistrate or a high official in my church. If you have something to, you know, give over to the devil here, and so what happened is Aquino got very disillusioned, and a lot of the priests left because they had begun to take the spiritual quest seriously, and he did a ritual, and in the ritual he was approached by the Egyptian god Set. Who to me is just another, my God, it's just like Horus,
right.
Is, you know, to Christ, Set is supposed to be the devil to like Christian dualism.
Right, right, right. Let me ask you just a question here, John. And by the way, we're speaking with now. Do you prefer John Ali? I think the Lord the Egan thing is kind of in your past, correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Well,
I dropped that. People found it too presumptuous, and they said, "You're not my Lord." You know, I would have Satanists shouting back at me.
Huh.
You know, because the Satanism is a religion that says you are God. So now you have all these gods in the satanic movement trying to beat up on one another, proving that they're the higher god.
Right.
It's like a pecking order. I said, no, that's not what Gnosticism is about.
No, that's right.
It's about elevating yourself and not beating up on other people. It's respecting the divinity in every man and the divinity in every woman and every child.
Right.
And that's what it's supposed to be. And I would, my message would get lost. So
Sure. Well, I want to know, John, I mean, what do you actually believe? Do you believe in Satan?
I believe that if a person, now that's very good that you say that. I believe that not in the absolute objective sense, but in the relative subjective sense, yes. When you attach meaning and significance to a symbol or idea like Satan, then it becomes real for you and will affect your life in a meaningful and significant way. The devil exists for those who choose to believe in him. If you choose not to believe them for you, the devil doesn't exist. And it's as simple as that. But I believe that we're all expressions of divinity, that the all is literally one. The deist believed that when the creator created the universe, he then went on vacation or something. He went away. he didn't stick around. Well, what I believe is that when the creator created the universe, he became the manifestation. The manifestation is an expression of his will in everything you see around you and everything you experience, and that you yourself are a fragment of, you know, an expression of consciousness of the divine, of the creator. The creator himself is imperfect.
Right.
And the creator himself will realize his perfection when the universe has come to an end.
Right.
When the Big Bang becomes the Big Crunch and it, everything forms back into a little ball and then it explodes. And I believe it explodes, by the way, and starts all over again.
Right.
That it's like a cycle. Big Bang, expansion of the universe, expansion, contraction, Big Crunch, another Big Bang. And it goes on and on for infinity.
Well, you just described the career of George Bush in one sentence. That was good. So how would you describe Satan? Like, to you, John, I don't want to know, you know, all the different definitions. I want to know personally, what is Satan, as far as John Ali is concerned?
For me, personally, Satan represents the male aspect of divinity. I believe that the divine is both male and female.
So do I.
And that you know, like a positive, and I don't mean in the sexual sense.
No.
I mean in like a positive or a negative charge to the universe. I believe there's a positive charge that's pushing out, and then there's the quiet, there's the dark side. To simplify it. Like at night, things are still. There's, you know, in the daylight when the sun's out, there's things happening. Grass is growing. That's the solar phallic type of thing, and experience. It's the pushing out, whereas the other one is drawing in, and it's kind of like life, birth, death. You know, the cycle of life, birth, and death. Mm. It's I kind of see it as one side of the palette. When I see Satan, I see Satan as being synonymous with Yahweh.
Okay.
As representing just that force, that giving of life.
Okay, all right.
So that gave life to all of us. And I really do, I equate them as one and the same. And, in the old biblical text, I think there's many biblical scholars that misinterpret what the meaning of the adversary really is. In Judaic tribes, when somebody committed a heinous act, he was brought before the rabbi, and the rabbi would act as the devil's advocate, but really the advocate, in a court case, you have the defense attorney and he was the prosecuting attorney on behalf of Yahweh or Jehovah, and he would, you know, grill the person until, you know, and everyone would be around until that person realized that he had sinned and had gone against God. And, you know, it was a very positive experience. I don't know how the adversary went from being a positive experience like that to being the enemy of God.
Sure, sure. Well, according to Anton LaVey, Satan means the adversary or the opposition or the accuser. It doesn't necessarily mean evil or brutality or cruelty.
Yeah, that's true. I absolutely agree with you. But unfortunately, what LaVey didn't realize is in his church, and he admitted it himself to the FBI when the FBI interviewed him, and I do show these quotes that upset a lot of Satanists now because I do reveal the truth to them. And LaVey says, well, I have to agree that 90% of the members of the Church of Satan are nutcase weirdos, wackos, something to that. And, of course, the Satanists aren't too happy to hear that, you know, that he considered the majority of them to be, you know, nutcases.
Yeah. Would you say that the Satanic Bible, which I think was first published by LaVey in the 60s, and its teachings are seen not as another competing spiritual path to which conformity is demanded, but as a call to develop one's own way?
Yes, exactly. I would agree with that. A call to develop one's own way. And he would put, like, his own personal diatribes, the nine satanic states. But he even said privately that, more or less, that, you know, you have to make up, you know, have your own inner revealing to live the life the way, you know, you plan and not, you know, live by his command. You know, suddenly he died, and all of a sudden these nine satanic statements, which were supposed to be like suggestions, became gospel for a new generation of Satanists. And all of a sudden, Anton LaVey was being eulogized as some kind of a savior for the devil or whatever. And this is something LaVey never wanted. It's just the weirdest thing how something can start out as an absolute joke and then end up as, you know, theistic Satanist sects that literally do see this as real. I mean, and as they believe, so shall it be done, you know, so shall it become manifest. If you believe something, then it should become, it's manifest for you. It is done unto you.
Sure, but if the Satanic Bible is a call to develop one's own way, I mean, someone might even say, really? Even Christianity? The Satanic Bible would not be a call to develop one's own way, even if it was Christianity. Would you say that?
Right. You know, it doesn't have to be called Satanism either.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, so are you saying that the Satanic...
You could call it Gnosticism and actually be truthful about it.
Right. Well, and that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, if you're a genuine 100% bona fide Gnostic... and that's Gnostic, folks, not agnostic. Gnostic, G-N-O-S-T-I-C. If that's you, John, then why? I don't understand why you use the label Satanist.
Because I think for the time it was, and the time I lived during the 1960s, it was a cathartic experience. It was kind of like, what is the word I'm thinking of? There's a word... where you don't take something literally, where it's a lampoon of the values you... it's a word like parody.
Right.
It's a word like parody, but it becomes a way of cleansing oneself of past conditioning. But, you know, so let's say I spit on the crucifix or whatever. But if I continue to spit on the crucifix... and it continues to become an obsession where I'm rebelling against Christianity, then I say there's something wrong.
Interesting.
I mean, if a person burns their Bibles or was brought up under very strict parents who beat him or put him in the closet and made him light a little altar or did something. If people were raised that way and they need a cathartic relief, and the cathartic relief is burning their Bible, then I say, fine. But if you continue to burn your Bibles and you continue to desecrate Christian relics, you know, supposedly you do it to get it out of your system,
yeah,
whatever the psychological malaise was.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I find there's a lot of these Satanists, they continue to deteriorate. They continue to rebel against, instead of rebelling against maybe their parents, which might be a healthy rebellion, and discovering their own values and attending their own whatever, you know, seeking their own guidance, you know, they continue to rebel. They continue to decline psychologically, spiritually.
Sure.
And what I've seen is that there's certain instances where people who come into Satanism initially and they get the rebellion stuff out of their system, then they're ready to really go back.
Well, then they can embrace Gnosticism.
Rediscover God.
Then,
or rediscover their own divinity.
Right, right. Do you still go by the label of the High Priest of the First Church of Satan, or is that not a label you hang with anymore?
No, never. No, I dropped it altogether.
Okay, all right.
I just see it as at this point as ludicrous. And most of my devotees, though, 3,000 plus, I mean, I really don't know how many there are out there that have been really, you could say fans, they get it.
Yeah.
They get it. They understand. Yeah, we have now the Alley Shadow Tradition.
Right.
At alleyshadowtradition.com, A-L-L-E-E, by the way. And we've written a book called Right and Left of Center, which really does lay it out, this whole thing about what I mentioned before with the male and female aspect.
Yeah, actually,
creation
John, I saw...
And really representing the female, me representing the... In a way, it comes through that way. But
right.
We she came from the right-hand path. I came from the left-hand path. She was a Catholic schoolgirl and... You know,
I've read a lot of your work online, and I've watched a lot of the videos, and there's some very interesting stuff on there. I don't think people can write you off as uneducated bimbos or serial nutcases. The stuff that's on your website and the articles that you have written, boy, there's some really interesting things in there. But you know what? I need to ask you this, though. If you really are about Gnosticism and maybe even a dose of hedonism and self-indulgence or maybe some panentheistic sort of stuff, having done away with the rules, you know, deism, I don't know. How come all the skeletons and skulls and costumes and spooky stuff, is that all behind you as well?
Well, I still think that death is part of life, and life is part of death. And it's all, you know, I don't see skulls and I just don't see them as scary.
Right.
I see them as skulls, I see them as what they are now. It's like, we can't be afraid of death.
What do you think, John, is the difference between white light religions like Wiccans or Salem witches and Satanism?
The difference between white light religions like Wicca and Satanism?
Right-hand path and left-hand
path. Yeah, it's more like, again, right-hand path stuff and left-hand path stuff. You know, it's... The right hand path waits for reward to do good. You know, and when you die, you get rewarded, is the whole idea. And the Wiccans go to Summerland.
Right.
Right.
And the left hand path is now living in the here and now every day.
There seems to be a lot of divisiveness within the left-handed paths. I mean, I thought the Christian church was bad, but I've seen a lot of YouTube things and articles online, and you guys are almost, it's almost like you're hating on each other, the different representative groups.
Yes, worse than many Christian groups do. You know, you'll see some Christian groups really going at one another, but boy, the Satanists have them beat nowadays. Huh. And the Wiccans. The Wiccans are horrible.
Oh, well, I know. I know. And again, I don't know. This is going to sound sexist, but, you know, those women, when they get onto each other, it's like a big old cat fight on YouTube there, let me tell you.
It is. And
what do you think is, like, I don't know, this is going to sound like a bit of a rookie question here, but the point behind casting spells or curses or bindings? Is that just a cathartic thing, helping someone let it go?
There is some truth to it. There is some truth to it, cursing, binding, but it's it has to go with the flow of nature, or as the Christians say, with the will of God. I mean, you can't be going against the will of nature.
Okay, I don't understand that. Like the Christian belief is similar, helping you let it go, because if you hang on to bitterness and unforgiveness, it's just going to rot you out from the inside out. So the Christian belief is similar that way. Revenge is mine, saith the Lord, so don't be hungering down into revenge. Except it's based around forgiveness instead of revenge. But your spells or curses or bindings seem like they're based on revenge.
Can I give an example?
Yeah.
Somewhere in the Bible it says that when a person curses you and smites you, bless them and smile at them, and that'll heap more coals upon their head.
Right.
And that's what it's like. What I've done in my so-called bindings is give the people that hated me and wanted to see me destroyed a little push, a little psychic push. And when I'd meet them the next day after I did that, my little binding on them, you know, where I just heap more of the coals on their own head. I more or less bind them so that they can harm no one but themselves at some point. They can no longer project any more hostility towards others.
Right.
And it kind of comes back on them.
Because you guys are sort of into the agnostic or sort of, self-deification in many ways, the Christians might be saying, dear God, help me do this or protect me from my enemies and you take care of things. And you guys are sort of saying, no, I'm going to speak the words, the spell, the curse, or the binding. I'm going to speak the words, and it's going to just, it'll be that little push towards that person.
I see myself as an instrument. As an instrument of the whatever created me, as just another, an arm or a leg or a,
right.
We're all part of the one. I don't see us as
Are you summoning like a spirit or the creator when you're casting spells?
I always feel that no matter what spell I cast, it's an aspect of the creator.
Okay.
Whether it's a creation, and that there are these forces are not opposed. Like in the early, let's say as an example, the early Egyptian pantheon, when you had one god representing the south of Egypt that was fertile, and the Nile, and the north that represented, that's Set, and that's the desert, that's the arid wilderness, and where thunderstorms, and as being the part of nature that's hostile towards man, but they didn't see it as, well, that part of nature is hostile towards man, therefore it's synonymous with evil.
Right.
And the Nile is enriching our lives, and that's where we grow things, and therefore that's the good God. You know, it's later on when Persian dualism came about in like 1500 B.C., or whatever, and the Islam people, we got this idea that there was a good aspect of God and an evil aspect of God. And, let's call the evil aspect of God Satan and the good aspect of God Christ. Hmm. It's just ridiculous.
Sounds like an Alice Cooper concert. I went to that a few weeks ago. It was very interesting how Alice Cooper performs this strange juxtaposition of the two, the good and the bad of each person. It's very interesting stuff. Here's a quote from you, I think. I think you said, you can't curse a person living an authentic life. Is that true?
That's true.
So if I'm an authentic, straight-up follower of Christ, and I'm being, I'm not a shyster, I'm not bilking people out of money, I'm not living a double life, and I don't know, all that kind of stuff.
And you're not a Christian hypocrite at all. Then you're living, you listen to your heart, and you do, you live in accordance with the balance of nature, or what you would call the will of God, then you have nothing to fear.
Right, right.
There's no way a person can so-called curse you, because you would have to be off balance in the first place for them to come along and give you a little psychic push.
Right, right.
Precipice.
I understand that.
You'd have to be way off balance to begin with.
Have you, John, have you ever found yourself bound?
Yes. And I've learned from it.
Did you find out who did it to you?
Yes.
Did you get him back?
I'm trying to think of the, I know it's happened to me. I can't think of an experience, but I think, yes, in fact, I have, as a matter of fact. There were people from LaVey's church that had thrown several curses on me, several. I became like this because I had brought out all these, the hypocrisy within the organization. The fact that you can't put the word church and Satan in the same sentence. It was an oxymoron. And I thought of my own church as kind of like a parody of theirs. And point out the hypocrisy within their system. And then people began to take my church seriously. It was weird. And then that's when I started to teach my own approach to self-divinity.
So
people finding their own self-divinity.
Are you the boss, so to speak, of the First Church of Satan, or do you have anything to do with the First Church of Satan anymore?
Oh, I don't have anything to do with it anymore.
All right.
But even when I did, I didn't consider myself the boss.
Well, okay, yeah,
I considered everyone to be, important.
Yeah, that was bad terminology in my part. Leader, whatever the deal is. Let's talk about evil, John. How do you define evil?
Oh, my goodness, that's a very good question. Well, you can't even define evil without discussing what's good, so I think, therefore, the two are inseparable.
Well said.
And one can't understand darkness without experiencing light. They're continuums, yeah. And we need the opposite. We live in a dualistic universe. But in order to achieve balance, sometimes to reach the very heights of joy and ecstasy, one has to be drugged into the very bowels of depression and feelings of loss, and it's just so funny how things happen. But it's the duality that, in a sense, and all the diversity of nature that's beautiful, really.
Mm.
And I see life as, even with all its pain and woe, and as being beautiful.
You have said that Dylan Klebold and Eric Harris, the two boys responsible for the Columbine massacre, were just in need of love. And so I've got to ask you, what kind of love would you have given them?
As a father, acceptance. I'd let them feel that they were important, they were special. That I know that they were being ignored by their own parents and
peer population.
They were different, and so they were picked on. But it's really sad. They didn't have a strong base. I think even if they had a good Christian parents, that might have saved them. That might have been the thing the saving grace that would have. and they don't have to be Christian.
No,
of course, they could have even been.
Well, you think about the love that
but
Christ...
They would teach them self-love, which is very important.
Yeah. Well, you think about the love that Christ talked about and preached about and 1 John talking about the fact that God is love. How do all those verses and the Christology or the biblical worldview, how does all that stuff kind of sit with you, especially
when we think about defining evil and the fact that Dylan Klebold and Eric Harris performed, you know, some of the, what I would say, some of the most evil acts. Well, it was evil what they did, and they were just in need of love, according to you. And then we talk about Christ being about love, and God says he is love, and the sacred scriptures. How does all that wash out with you, John?
Well, there's also the polemic, and it's like you have Christ making a polemical statement when he says, if a man smite you on one cheek, turn to him the other also, or whatever. And then you have the parody written by Redbeard. When a man smites you across one cheek, smash him on the other. Smite him hip and thigh, for self-preservation is the highest law. And what I see these two statements is not one is evil and one is good, but they're addressing two realities. And what you have to do is not go to one extreme or the other and just say to yourself, you know, go one, you know, you smash him on the other cheek when that makes sense. You turn to him the other also when that makes sense. You have to use your own judgment. There is a time for war and a time for peace and all that other stuff you've no doubt heard about.
Yeah, sure. You know, when I
you have to realize the Sermon on the Mount was like a polemic. It wasn't like, you know, take these words literally. In many instances, I'm inspired by the words of Christ, but I don't go out and try to, promote every word as being, you know, and the absolute font of truth or whatever.
Sure.
It's, you know, you have to use your own judgment. You know, God gave us free will.
A lot of people whom I've met who are into the occult in some form or another. And this is just my personal anecdotal experience. I'm not trying to make a judgment call across the board. But a lot of people who I've met who are into the occult in some way tend to be, for the most part, people who have been wronged especially when they were younger. People who have deep insecurities or maybe social outcasts who are desperately just trying to get back some control. And I think about you, you know, when you were younger, you were bullied at school. You were even hit by your teacher.
That's true. Not right across the it's funny. I went flying across the room when he hit me.
Wow.
Flying out of my chair and across the room because the poor man didn't realize that I had come from an abusive household, and that there would be days when I would get an A because I did have a borderline genius IQ. They did a test on me, and they said, he says, I don't understand this. I saw your IQ results, and you're trying to make me look like a fool by getting a failing grade one day and a passing grade the next. And he thought I was some kind of wise guy, and not really knowing me or understanding my situation, he just slapped me across the face. And the fact that his name was John Allen, whereas mine was Ali. You know, it's like maybe he just took it as a strange personal, you know, reflection of himself or something scary.
Yeah. Well, even Eric, is it Fraze, I think is his last name, the Witch King of Salem, he said in his annual address that for too long now, Satanism has been misunderstood and feared by many. We Satanists have been the subject of ridicule, misunderstanding, and blatantly labeled evil. And even Wiccans have distanced themselves from Satanism. So I got to ask you, John, why do you think so many who have been rejected at some point in their life, they end up getting into something that faces constant ridicule? You know, you'd think they'd want to stop being an outcast. I mean, everybody wants to be loved and known and cared for and appreciated.
I think the path to self-divinity, true self-divinity, as taught by Christ, is a solitary path. And what did he say? You know, to continue to have faith, even though one will persecute you and in my name's sake and blah, 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 blah. I think that he was talking about the fact that the path to self-divinity is a very solitary, very, you know, you will be ostracized. You will be, because you don't belong to a group. You belong to the all one. You belong to the all one is reflected, you know, within. I mean, this is what I believe anyway.
You know what? We've gone over time. Do you have a couple of more minutes? We're just about done, John.
Sure.
I've got so many questions here. When I was doing the research on you, my mind just exploded. So thanks for bearing with me. What is the difference between Lord Egan and John Alley?
The difference between Lord Egan and John Alley. Lord Egan was a persona that I killed. I killed off. I made an announcement on my website that he was deceased. It had become a character in people's minds, like one of these wrestlers, you know, that you see on television.
Sure, sure.
You know, that get into these costumes and pretend to be something that in their private life they are most definitely not. And I just couldn't live that way anymore. I said, they no longer were focused on my message, because my message is kind of difficult for people to, you know, attach themselves to, because it's saying that, you know, they have to throw off this preconditioning and this mold handed to them down by society, and to recreate themselves to become divine and to, you know, experience it. And they, you know, they don't want to hear that crap. If you'll pardon my...
No, it's good. Did you get a red card? And when you left the whole, you know, Lord Egan thing behind, did you burn your red card?
I burned my red card years prior to that, believe it or not.
Oh, okay.
I left the Church of Satan in 1974, before their schism with the Temple of Set, where Martin Luther, a.k.a. Michael Aquino,
right.
went and said, well, I've got the true Christianity, and...
Yeah.
Oh, it's so funny, and you're selling degrees, and, you know, it's just, you know, I just found that spooky. It just spooked me out so much. I said, oh, my God, this is a repeat of Christianity.
Yeah.
I'm getting out of here.
Oh, my goodness. So what did you do in the in-between time in the 80s?
In the 1980s, I hung pretty low, and I would pop out every so often and do an interview in a newspaper, or I was on doing cable television, and blaspheming on Cape Cod in Massachusetts, and upsetting the populace there.
What do you believe is going to happen when you die, John?
Personally?
Yeah.
I believe that the personality that you know as John Alley will cease to exist. I believe that the funny thing is, even the darn atheists, they have a handle on some... Everyone has a little bit of the truth in their pocket. And I believe, yes, whereas there is a part of me that will die, but the personality I knew was John Alley. But I think that the soul, or the consciousness, there's a consciousness that will continue. It'll evolve. It'll continue. Everything evolves. I believe that everything is constantly evolving.
Are we talking about a reincarnation-y kind of thing for you?
Possibly.
Okay, all right.
I mean, for me personally, I don't believe... I believe that if I reincarnate, it'll be something to do with choice.
Okay. Well, look, just to finish this off, honestly, I'm not sure how you feel about Christians or Christianity. I wish I had more time to talk with you about that, but I want to finish off this conversation by apologizing to you for the, like, this might sound a bit trite, but I honestly mean this, for the massacres committed on behalf of Jesus, for the amount of clergy who committed then tried to cover up various cases of pedophilia, for the fact that Christians supported slavery for so long, for the way that us Christians have treated the marginalized, like the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community. And I would like to apologize for the unjustifiable opulence that so many Christians seem to think is their God-given right. I'm really sorry, John, that we haven't been more like Christ, and I'm sorry for our religion.
Well, that's really very kind of you. I think I find so few Christians willing to actually stand up and make... Believe it or not, I've met one or two like you, and it's just amazed me. You've now earned my respect. Tenfold. I mean, really, thank you. I find that inspiring.
Well,
that you would say such a thing. And of course, there's lots of hypocrisy to go around.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I think we can all share a slice in that. Listen, John, it's been great. You know, maybe in the future we'll touch base again. Would that be all right?
Definitely.
John, thank you.
I'll see you. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. Wow, there's quite an interview, let me tell you, there with John Ali. He used to be Lord Egan from the First Church of Satan, and quite a lot of interesting stuff he had to say. Listen, if you were listening to that and you have a reaction or response, maybe it upset you that we aired that, we gave him airtime or something, or you found something very interesting or contradictory, we're going to open up the phone lines for just a couple of minutes, folks. 905-338-1250. Do you have any questions or comments about our interview with one of the most prominent Satanists in the world, John Ali? We'll take your calls in a couple of minutes.
Blah, blah, blah. It's all about what Drew thinks. Let's hear from you. Call now at 905-338-1250.